We're going to ask you in community here to eventually invite community into your life, trust them, and ultimately be vulnerable with them. I think you could say it this way. We seek to practice the Christian path collectively, understanding that it's traveled best with company. We choose to not walk alone and invite others into our own personal journeys, recognizing that growth and development can only come through the wisdom and guidance of others. We acknowledge the tremendous risk and potential harm this creates. Have you ever had someone speak into your life uninvited? If you have, you know that that can be incredibly damaging. And so our collective practice here is that for others to speak meaningfully into our lives, it must be done by invitation alone. We're going to encourage each other to extend this invitation, to give others our trust, and risk being vulnerable in order to help us grow and develop. To grow, to walk the Christian path, we must invite others in. Which brings us back to the great riddle of the Anasazi people who mysteriously vanished in the U.S. Southwest around AD 1300. And if you've been following this thread in this series with us, you'll know that the years leading up to their disappearance for the Anasazi people, they were excruciating. There was a severe drought in the homeland, and there was warfare, violence, brutal violence all around. And so with dwindling resources and the threat of warfare among the people, in the 20 to 50 years before the Anasazi disappeared, they began building and retreating into cliff dwellings. It's perhaps the most remarkable relic that these people have left us. I mean, take a look at some of these cliff dwellings they built. They are wild. Imagine living here. So this one's got some labels on it. You can see the houses in the middle of the cliff there. And most of these dwellings have what they call a toehold trail, little divots in the rock so they could climb up to these dwellings. So imagine bringing the kids home. Kids, we got to go home. First, you got to climb up a rock to get there. Take a look at some of these others. Next, look at that one. You can see they had set a ladder up just there to the right. Next slide. Take a look at that. Imagine living there or next one. Now, that's a nice view, right? But living up in these cliff dwellings where you can see for miles, or next one. This one's great because you can't quite see, but the housing is right in that little divot along the cliff there. Here's a closer look at what it looked like inside. I mean, imagine having kids saying, kids, be careful playing, because if you take one wrong step, you're falling to your death. Or this one. Most of these you can't get to because it requires rock climbing skills, but this is the one I'm excited about because I plan to go there this summer. Yeah. Kristen lets me go away again to the U.S. Southwest on my little journey. But these are tucked way in the back country of the U.S. Southwest. They're absolutely fascinating. Now, they're sort of gorgeous and mysterious, these cliff dwellings. But historically, the Anasazi, they've become known as some of the greatest rock climbers in all of history. In fact, there's a climbing shoe you can buy named after them. These dwellings are crazy to me, and to stand in them is remarkable. But I want to ask this question. What do these dwellings communicate? For archaeologists, the meanings of these dwellings is crystal clear. They're defensive. These perches are not only hard to see and find, but for those living in them, they had an eagle-eye view of their surroundings. They could see enemies approaching from miles away. But most importantly, these dwellings are beyond defensive. They're quite simply, they're just inaccessible. It would almost be impossible for anyone to try to attack you living here. How would you even begin to think about making an attack there? Remember when my friend Riley and I, when we first stepped into a dwelling called Step House, we were just blown away by how remarkable it was sitting on a perch on this cliff and looking at these houses, the buildings they had made. And so it seems this, as a last-ditch effort before they disappeared, the Anasazi resorted to living in dwelling places that scream paranoia, fear, defensiveness. By this time for the Anasazi, their goal seems to have been to make themselves as inaccessible as possible. Build walls and fortresses that no one can get to. No one can penetrate. Trust no one. Don't be vulnerable. Don't trust a single person. The world's on fire and falling apart. The world is hostile. Don't let anyone in. Be afraid. Be more than afraid. Be paranoid. Always watch your back. Close yourself off. Hide. No weakness. No vulnerability. Build for yourself a place no one can get to. And I don't know about you, but I often feel the same way. This world can feel hostile to me, and that's coming from a white male. I mean, most of us know the pain of being burnt or hurt in the past. None of us want to experience that, right? And so it becomes easy. We just close ourselves off, move into a defensive posture. I don't want to be hurt. Don't want to be betrayed. Don't want to be attacked. Don't want to be misunderstood. So I don't want to be vulnerable. So we trust very few people in life, and we're vulnerable around even fewer. I want to show you a picture of my brothers. This is us in front of Tom's restaurant in New York. You will see that I'm the strong, sensible, well-adjusted, compassionate, discerning, clever, and humble one of the four. These are my four brothers. We went to New York City a while back. We were there for 3 days together. Now, here's the interesting thing I want to tell you. Going in to the 3 days together, I knew that each of them were facing specific struggles in their life. How did I know that? From my mom, because she tells me what's going on in the family, you know. So I knew that they were experiencing struggles, challenges in life. And the whole 3 days we were together, not one of us said one word about any of that. All we did was talk about museums, politics, argued with each other about faith, stuff like this. Not once did we get personal. Like, hey, what's going on in your life? You got some struggles going on. Not once. And then we got home from the trip, and 2 days after I got home, I got an email from one of my brothers, big beard guy. And he had sent it out to the three of us, and he said, hey, just want to let you know, I have some challenges I'm facing in life, and so I want to invite you three brothers to speak into my life. He said, I'm going to give you a free shot here to point out two blind spots about me. It was incredibly vulnerable, and I remember I texted my brother, Mike, mellow and different one, and I said, did you get that message from Troy? He's like, yeah, that was weird. I said, yeah, it was weird. Should we reply? He's like, I don't know. What do you do with that? That's very awkward. Like, we had gone from this posture of, hey, we can argue about stuff and chat about stuff, go to museums together, but keep it from a distance. And all of a sudden, one of the brothers said, let's get real. And it creeped us out. And so the three of us are texting the other three. What should we do? What should we do? You reply first. You reply first. Eventually, we all replied, but it was incredibly difficult. And I realized why. Because one of my biggest struggles in life is this. I feel so competitive. And I often experience life as a game. And I'm competing a lot of times against my brothers. And so for any of us to show weakness or to become vulnerable, the moment, say, I would admit to struggling or not having my life together, the moment I admit that maybe I've made a mistake or I've messed up, the moment I confess to something being over my head, the moment I become vulnerable or weak, it feels like I'm losing in life. And I hate being seen as a loser. I despise the idea that if I show weaknesses, that it might give someone the power to think they're better than me or they're ahead of me. And my temptation so often then is to retreat to the cliffs where no one can get to me. My posture is to just hide. But here's the thing, it doesn't work. Because to grow, to walk the Christian path, we must invite others in. It's the only way. Christian path was never meant to be traveled solo, and Jesus models this through his entire life. It's constantly vulnerability, simply part of the path that we travel. We cannot grow and become the people we were meant to be without being vulnerable, without giving our trust. And so that's what we're going to ask of you this morning. And so I'm going to ask Julie to come and share a little bit about her own journey with vulnerability. And then, Ruthie will come. We've got a song in the middle. It's going to be wonderful. So, Julie?
I recently discovered a box of love letters my father wrote to my mother 65 years ago. I got no further than the first letter in the pile. November 24th, 1952. My darling Wilma, a whole 6 days before I see you again. I'm sure this is going to be the longest week yet. So please, write often and keep telling me that you love me. To me, this was utterly romantic. Most significantly because I know how the story ends, 50 years of loving marriage. But as I read this, I was struck by the words, keep telling me. Because the contrast of how beautiful it seemed when my father said it and how weak they seem when I say them. I've been struggling lately, feeling stuck and unsure, a little lost, even though I'm standing where I want to be standing. I long for encouragement and affirmation. And the direction and motivation they instill, knowing that what I do matters, that I matter. My seemingly excessive need for this feels immature, selfish, and indulgent. The vulnerability and ache, painful. These words and letters were powerful and became a launching point for a Lent reflection series between Ruthie and me on a blog that we share called Silver Strands. We started writing each other letters, and they're personal, and we post them publicly. A few days in, three different people, unrelated, commented to me that this seemed like a really courageous thing to do, a vulnerable thing, and it made me curious, what was I revealing? What was it that I was saying that made them think, wow, I'm surprised she's posting this? And what about all the things I'm not saying? All the holding back, the things I delete and defer and edit, and nor did any of them say that they enjoyed it. This exchange with Ruthie doesn't feel particularly vulnerable to me. Sure, there are times it's hard to put all the feels out there publicly, and I've certainly suffered a bit of vulnerability hangover. I also haven't figured out which is more vulnerable, putting it out there for lots of people to read, or to put it out there and have no one read it, or to have people read it and not acknowledge it, have it not affect them. But this friendship, this intimacy with Ruthie, doesn't feel particularly vulnerable. It doesn't feel brave or hard. She makes it easy. Contrary to what she's about to come up here and say, following me, she invites this intimacy. She makes it known that I matter. She engages, she shares, she encourages, she opens up. I thought our friendship was fast and furious, only recently realizing that it's been years in the making. 6 years of intentional invitation, trust, and vulnerability. 6 years ago, Ben and I came to Nexus. We would slip in and avoid eye contact. That year, our parents were dying and life was so hard. Sitting in the round at the Walper, forced to look at others and be seen by them, was exposure to a high degree. That year, I introduced myself to Glenn to thank him for sharing his remarkable poetry during a service and to see if he might have a blog or something published that I could read, and I'm still hopeful for that publishing, by the way. Though my memory is generally spotty, I distinctly remember that conversation because I was surprised at how incredibly nervous I was to approach him and his friends he was engaged with and say, wow, you're great, how can I be part of that? That year would lead to Brad's invitation to be a storyteller, to share my words on a Sunday as part of a service. That in turn would lead to Ben and I hosting a Nexus summer barbecue where Teresa, my soon-to-be friend, would take a leap outside of her introverted comfort zone and show up at a stranger's house where we would hit it off. That would lead me to telling Amy how much her song gave me goosebumps, how powerful it was, how much it resonated, which led to walks together. And these four relationships form the foundation of what would become Glimpses, a special Sunday service dedicated to stories and songs around mental health. And here, at this special service, in season four, is where I met Ruthie. And not as a face, but as a piece of paper, with a beautiful poem about a fisheye view. We would later meet face-to-face over at the museum, being paired together for Nexus Kids. She would share on the stage the next year at the following Glimpses. We would work together on the Wilderness Walk, and then the Lent book, where I would have said our friendship truly began. There have been plenty of opportunities for hurts along the way for me here at Nexus. Failures, misunderstandings, letting go, lost friends, doubt, disappointing others, being disappointed myself. But it is so rich here, with possibility for real connection. Even the simple pleasure in feeling the joy of celebrating Chris and Karen's inauguration into grandparenthood, or Kelvin and Eliza's recent engagement this week, all the new babies and new homes, all the intriguing people, the depth of talent, and the breadth of heart. I hear feedback that at Nexus that it's hard to meet people, to get connected. I read the word lonely a lot, to which I encourage you, all of you, be patient, keep trying, reach out, step out, step up, be open, be alert, get hurt. It's pretty certain you will. And try again. I am. I wish I could tell you that it gets easier to be vulnerable, easier to extend an invitation, to wait for one or to accept one, easier to trust or to remain worthy of another's trust. If anything, the more I dig into these, the harder it gets. The deeper, more powerful and meaningful these relationships become, the more I have to lose. What gets easier is knowing that it's worth it. There's a massive distinction between telling someone a story and telling them your story. It's a difference between a stack of words to fill space, to gloss over an issue, to paint a picture, powerful picture profile, or to cover a glaring fissure, and the raw, honest possibility of being seen and known and loved as you are.
So I really want to be known, really. But do I really? It's so easy to walk in here each Sunday and just walk out the same way. How often do we exist in spaces but never really see one another, never really feel seen by one another? And I've been coming to Nexus for a while, about 3 years now, and I know a lot of faces. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't really know a lot of names. And when I first used to come, when we were up at the Whopper, I'd sit at the back, and I would be the last one in, and I would slip right out. I used to say that Nexus was way too pretty for me, like everyone was well-dressed and put together, and I was my messy, unshowered self, just journaling in the corner. And to be honest, sometimes I wish that Nexus was messier. Sometimes I wish that someone would walk in off the street and start talking loudly, or that one of us would raise our hands and say, things are really shitty right now, can you help? Or all the technology would fail and we'd have to sing acoustic and off-key. So it's my fault that the mic stopped working. I clearly jinxed it. And I can try to be open. I can try to let others in. But I find it really hard, like really, really hard. I'm shy, or an introvert. I'm often really anxious, like right now. I love people, but I hate big groups. I'm emotional, but I have some really big walls. I've been single for most of my life, so I don't have a lot of experience being open to intimacy, and really it terrifies me. On the other hand, I really crave connection. I love depth, and I hate small talk. I'm surrounded by amazing friends, but I'm often really lonely. I can write vulnerably, but really, I'm scared of being seen. Brad already read the descriptive words about the practice, about invitation, trust, and vulnerability, and I took the liberty of rewriting them this way. We invite you to take chances. Put yourself out there. Not quite like joining an online dating site, but kind of. We do want you to engage vulnerably with one another, to show up and be willing to be seen. And we'll respect your boundaries. We'll ask your consent before we barge into your life. But if you welcome us, we'll plunk ourselves down on your couch with a coffee and ask how things are going. And we really want to know. Fine is not an appropriate answer. So we're inviting you to trust us, to trust God, to trust one another. And there's risks. Sometimes you'll get hurt, and sometimes things will be messy. But that's the beauty of being a part of a caring community. There'll be someone there to love and care for you through the painful parts of being human. So that's a little bit about what I want to talk about today. Taking the risk to show up, to be seen, taking the risk to tell our stories. Brené Brown, a shame researcher, says that courage is telling our stories with our whole hearts. And Julie made those beautiful cards for you guys to take home that just has that quote to remind us. And so often we don't want to do this. And there's a lot of reasons. Brad kind of mentioned some of them before with the Anasazi, but we want to fit in, we want to please people or look good. We want to try to stay safe in our little enclaves. We're ashamed. We don't want to be bullied. We don't want to look weak. We don't want to get in trouble. We don't want to be different. The common thread through all these things is shame. And so what does shame tell us could happen if we are honest and vulnerable? Shame says, well, you'll be exposed. People are going to use it against you. They're not going to like you. People are going to be afraid of you if they knew you thought like that. If your boss knew, you're not going to get a promotion. You might get laughed at, you'll be abandoned. Ultimately, you're gonna end up alone. I think all of us have that little voice sometimes that says that. But what else could happen? Well, you might help someone with your story, make someone else feel less alone. Maybe you'll begin to heal or help someone else begin to heal. Maybe you'll make a new friend. Maybe you'll have some increased empathy, or maybe you can even connect on a deeper level. But from an early age, we're taught to wear masks. We're taught to pretend, to hide, and we do this to protect ourselves, just like the Anasazi did. Our social media reality adds to this. We add filters to the selected images we put on the highlight reels of our lives. We rarely see the moments right before or after the photo. I have a friend who's very beautiful, and she has 5 very beautiful children. This is not her. This is Angelina Jolie. I thought it would be creepy if I put a picture of her just off of Facebook. Her profile picture actually looks way more beautiful and put together than any picture I could find of Angelina Jolie and her children. But one day, she was showing us on her phone pictures of her youngest daughter, Primrose. And this picture where Prim was like looking at the camera with flowers and smiling. And then she accidentally swiped right. And the next picture was Primrose standing on her high chair, but like on the table of the high chair, naked, in this kitchen, like covered. There's food everywhere, toys. It was just really messy. And she was so embarrassed, and she quickly swiped back and like got the picture of Prim looking sweet again. And she was so embarrassed. But I loved it. All of a sudden, Prim was real. Her mom was real. Instead of magazine mannequins, they were messy and alive. And I instantly felt more connected and at ease with her than I ever had before. And here at Nexus, we want to show the before pictures, the during pictures, not just the pretty finished product. We want to share, as Brené Brown calls it, the messy middle. In her book, Rising Strong, Brené explains that the messy middle is the act 2 of our stories. It's a time when you're in the dark, the door is closed behind you, you're too far in to turn around, but not close enough to the end to see the light. And when you're in that place, it requires bravery and courage to look at our stories, to be honest with our struggles, to ask for help. It can be hard to reach out to people, even the ones that we trust. We all want redemption. We all want to hear the stories when people have come through to the other side. We're wired for the finale. But the reality is, growth and development happens in the messy middle. Trust grows in the middle. That's why things like glimpses or poetry shared on stage is important. They allow us to see people in the midst of their struggle, not just when they've come out to the other side or when they've completed their hero's journey. But it's hard to be vulnerable, to be messy like that. The Pharisees, they weren't really messy like that, or at least they didn't seem messy. And listen to what Jesus said to them. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You're like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness." The Pharisees, they looked great. They were doing everything right, but on the inside, they were filled with darkness. And the thing is, when we look at the Bible, there's a lot of people who were actually really messy, even the people that hung out with Jesus, especially the people that hung out with Jesus. Brad told me that I needed to include more scripture when I spoke today. And I thought it was going to be really difficult. But then when I was looking, the challenge was kind of figuring out to choose which messy example to share. I was like, looking at the Psalms, and I was like, well, I could choose David after he slept with Bathsheba, or when he had her husband killed, or when he was crying and begging God not to kill their son. And then thinking about the disciples, the people Jesus hung out with. There was Judas who betrayed, Peter who denied, and even Jesus when he's in the garden asking for the cup to be taken away. So today is Palm Sunday, and the Lent readings for today include Jesus' procession into Jerusalem, but it also includes the Last Supper in the Garden of Gethsemane. So when it was evening, Jesus took his place with the 12, and while they were eating, he said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me." And they became greatly distressed and began to say to him one after another, "Surely not I, Lord." Then Jesus said to them, "You will all become deserters because of me this night. But after I am raised up, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." Peter said to him, "Though all become deserters because of you, I will never desert you." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the cock crows, you will deny me 3 times. Peter said to him, "Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you." And so said all the disciples. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and agitated. Then he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and stay awake with me." And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not stay awake with me 1 hour? Stay awake and pray, that you may not come into the time of trial. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again he went away for the 2nd time and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So in the Bible, we get all of it. We get to see the failures, the betrayal, the time the disciples fell asleep, the times when Jesus cried. And soon it's going to be Easter, and we're going to see Jesus hanging on the cross, naked and exposed, vulnerable. The gospel writers didn't leave that part out. They included the falling down, the beating, the face down in the arena moments, the bleeding on the cross. And it doesn't look really great on God, the creator of the universe, to have the protagonist suffer excruciating agony. No one really wants to see that. As Tony Campolo used to say, it's Friday, but Sunday's coming. And we all want to skip ahead to Sunday. We all want to fast forward to redemption. We want the empty whitewashed tomb, not the story of the bloody cloth-wrapped corpse. And in our own lives, are we willing to tell that story? Are we willing to be seen when we're in that place? Are we willing to tell our stories with our whole hearts, our whole story? At Nexus, we're inviting you to be vulnerable. We're inviting you to welcome others into your vulnerable places, inviting you to trust us, to trust one another, and ultimately to trust God. But as Brad said, we're also asking you to respect people's boundaries, to wait for the invitation. Don't just come in barging, offering advice. We're asking you to find some people that you can trust and open up to them. And you don't have to come up here and spill your guts, although you're welcome to. And it's not quite as scary as it looks, even though it kind of is. But we do really want everyone to develop trusting relationships where you're open to give and to receive. And sometimes, at least for me, it's easy to come in here and leave. There's good music, something interesting to learn, and the cover of darkness to slip out quietly after the service. It can feel a little bit like a movie theater without the popcorn. At least it used to feel like that for me. But I really needed that. For my first couple of years at Nexus, I needed to be able to slip in and out. I needed that boundary for healing and for safety. But over time, I also needed to be pushed out of my comfort zone, to sit around a table and eat Ethiopian food with my fingers, or to go to pub theology and have a beer with someone and learn their name. So we're not really asking you to take risks that you're not okay with. We understand that it's important to feel safe and to have the right to say no. It's important to have the right to privacy and to space. But we are inviting you to enter into something more, to be willing to let people into your life, even the messy bits. And we will be asking you to take some risks. And some of those risks will be here on Sunday morning. We might ask you to talk to a stranger or pass a cup to the person beside you. We might ask you to break bread with one another. Or we might ask you to try something new, like sit in pods. I know it's kind of weird when you came in, but I feel like it'll be good. And we're asking you even to just come out to pub theology, join a boomerang group, or come on our camping trip, if we're ever allowed at Lower Gorge again. Thank you, Brad. You could ask him later if you want to get to know Brad a bit more. And we're asking all of these things to help you grow, to help all of us grow, to deepen our relationships, to deepen our trust, to deepen our connections to God and to each other. Because honestly, sometimes it's just too easy to leave. It's too easy to hide behind screens or to sit next to strangers with headphones in. It's just too easy to Instagram filter our lives. And we don't really want this to be another public space where we enter and leave as strangers. Another space like the office where we have to pretend that everything's okay. Another forum just to show all of the pretty bits. When I was growing up, Sundays at our house were crazy. My mom would run around in her hosiery screaming about the mashed potatoes. My dad would hide in the office and pretend to make last-minute changes to his sermon. And my sister and I were forced to have our foreheads singed as my mom tried to quickly curl our bangs. We always had little burn marks on Sunday morning. And then we'd show up at church in scratchy tights and matching pink dresses, and we would all smile and have people back to our house for roast beef dinner. And nobody ever saw the chaos, just the picture-perfect image that we wanted. No one saw our messy first draft or the outtakes. And I recently went to the Banff Mountain Film Festival, and there was a video of a mountain biker doing crazy tricks in Scotland. And the best part of it, though, was the bloopers. I love that they showed all the times that he didn't land on top of the moving bale of hay. It was such a good reminder. And I think it's not, we have a video, but it was not going to work, just of like every time he fell off. It was great. But we want to be able to share our bloopers here. And that can feel really hard sometimes, because honestly, Next is a place where things are done really well. And I really appreciate that. I think we all appreciate all the work that goes in to making every Sunday flow, and it's just a beautiful curated service. But it can be really intimidating at the same time. It can be really hard to get up here after Brad speaks. I feel a little bit like someone who just had their mouth filled with cavities and like still frozen, and I'm kind of slurring my speech, and I talk too fast. I can imagine it's hard to play music after Calvin or Dave come up and just, like, blow us away. Or even hard to get involved creatively when Julie does such a good job curating all of the musicians and artists. But we're inviting you to get involved, to take risks, to open up at Nexus, but also in your own life, to be present to and in your life, to be willing to be vulnerable, willing to tell your story. And so now, just for the next few minutes, we're just going to spend a little bit of time getting to know one another. So you'll see that you're kind of sitting in pods, and at each pod, we've asked just a couple people to share a little bit about their story, and maybe before they share, if everybody could just share their names. And then we're just going to ask you, we're not going to ask you to share something deep, dark secret or something no one knows about you. We just want you to share a few words that describe your 2017 so far. We've got some grapes, so food, sometimes that can take away a bit of the awkwardness, something to focus on. Even though eating together, that can also be a vulnerable experience for some people, and it can also be an act of communion. And we know that small groups and eye contacts can be really uncomfortable. Probably some of you guys maybe shifted your chairs back when you got into the circle. We did a trial run of this, and we set all the chairs together, and Brad sat down and within 3 seconds had, like, shifted his chair back. He's got a very big personal bubble, clearly. He's got his own pod. So if all of this feels really uncomfortable and you just want to leave, that's totally okay. Just pretend to go to the bathroom and slip out. I do it all the time. And if you're in the group and you want to be silent, that's okay. If you want to give a one-word answer, that's totally okay, too. But we do want to invite you to stay, to trust us, and just to begin to trust the people around you. And as we said last week, we can't guarantee the safety, but what we can say is that at Nexus, we're committed to being an inclusive, caring community where it's okay to be messy and it's okay to take risks, where we learn to trust and to be seen and fully known. So we'll just spend the next few minutes in our small groups. And then someone will come up and announce when it's 11:30. So if you need to go get your kids, someone will let you know. And if you want to keep chatting, that's fine. If you need to leave, that's fine. I just want to ask quickly, a few people were asked to kind of send an email from Brad just to share their stories. If you were asked to share, can you put your hand up? Just so we know that if there's someone at every group, in case there's any groups that don't have people. Is anyone at a group without a hand up? Okay. All right. Well, if you... Oh, yeah. So after people share and you guys share their name, the question that we're going to ask is just to describe a word that describes your 2017 so far. So it can be one word, it can be a lot of words, up to you. But just a question to kind of get everyone chatting just a little bit.